Hello, lords and ladies of winter, and welcome to the Claws and Talons podcast. I am your host, Rosemary Rohr, and I am here with the lovely Estelle Gaylord.
Hi, everyone.
Estelle, now, without giving anything away, what is your overall opinion of the Kelpie's Curse?
Well, first of all, I would just like to take a moment to congratulations on your first of the series. It's a huge accomplishment, and I couldn't be any more proud to be a part of it, honestly. It's pretty cool. Without giving too much away, I will say that this book has great sentimental value to me, to Rose, and to another character modeled of it. But for the most part, it's a love story, it's an adventure, it's a dark tale, it's a folklore, it's just everything wrapped in one. It's one big thrill from start to finish. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what twist and turn is going to come. There's so many great details in this book, which I've always admired about Rosemary's writing, is the descriptions paint a beautiful, perfect picture in your mind. There's not anything in this book that you can't see or feel or fear or smell or anything in real life. It's that vivid, and I'm excited to be able to read through this step by step ever again, because I've only read it a couple different times, but each and every time is like, you know, I find new things in it that I didn't read before, or I didn't discover before, or something else clicks every time you read it. So hang on to your hats, folks, because this is going to be good. I'm pretty excited about it.
All right, and for those who don't know, how long have we known each other?
Oh, goodness. How long have we known each other? We've known each other since grade school, middle school.
I think I might have been 12, and I'm like a year or two older than you.
Yeah. Yeah, we won't tell anybody that. We'll edit that out later. yeah, she has been a lifelong childhood friend of mine for years, and I can't imagine my life without her, honestly.
Yeah, I can't say too much because, you know, we'll get into that, but some of my fondest memories were of us hanging out in town or down at the river, or just sitting next to the Welcome to Sherwood sign talking about how we couldn't wait to get out.
Do you remember our swings?
I remember our swings.
Oh, we swang just so much down at that old elementary school. Just, we had our favorite swings, and that's where we would go every time. We just had to escape, and we would talk about all the things we wanted to do and all the places we wanted to see. We talk about boys. We talk about our dreams. We talk about our goals. We talk about everything on those swings. And, oh, man, I wish I could go back.
Right?
I really do. I really do.
What adult doesn't have a moment where they're like, man, I messed up?
Yeah, I need a swing right now. I need a swing on this. Yeah.
And again, because those that don't know us or haven't come across the book before, and I don't really think I've done too much talking to other people, you know, outside of our social circle.
Right.
About the fact that the characters are based on actual people.
Yeah.
Most of them. Two of them. Three, if you count me.
Okay, a lot of them in this book are based on people we know that we don't tell people we know. We don't talk about them. But yeah, the main characters are pretty awesome.
Were we referencing your ex-boyfriend there?
Ouch! Yeah, you had to call me out on that one. You really did not like him.
Not even a little bit.
Nope, that's okay. That is okay. You know.
Yeah.
It's part of what makes the character.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's really growing up.
You know, especially for this particular character, he is, you know, you never see him, but the dark cloud that he puts on them in the very beginning kind of lingers.
It's evident. It's a mood in itself, really it is. And it sets the scene, and it kind of sets off some of the banter between the characters.
The tensions.
That really... you discover throughout this whole book. And personally, without giving too much away, the banter between the main characters are my favorite part, because, you know, once you find out what these characters are and who they are and they develop, you see a lifelong friendship there that, you know, again, sentimental, very sentimental, very sentimental.
And I take that as a very high compliment, because, like, I think writing, sometimes one of the hardest things to do is to write dialogue that feels organic.
Yeah.
And with this one, because I based the characters off of who I based them off of, I didn't have that issue. The banter just kind of flew.
And it's so great, because if you think about it, in real life, these characters is spot on. Like, oh my goodness. I laughed so hard reading the dialogue in this book between all of them. Because I was like, yeah, that is something she would say. Or, yep, okay. Yeah, you got it. Okay, you nailed that one on the head. You know, it just, there wasn't a dull moment between the characters, and it never, I mean, it warmed my heart. It warms other readers' hearts too when you read it, because, like I said, it's authentic friendship between these characters that you see.
Fearchar, Scotland, 1550. The night air was cold, and the night itself was black. The only illumination coming from the few torches held by the trembling townspeople. They all knew to fear the inky blackness of night. But it was not the night that they feared now. It was the creature that stood before them, just out of reach of the torch's light. Bide back, beast. One brave or stupid man. The rest of the gathered party weren't quite sure. Commanded as he stepped forward, "We have nae quarrel with ye, and ye have nae right to be here." The stallion threw his head back and laughed. Any of the villagers who had doubted that this was, in fact, the Kelpie that had terrorized them for so long, did not doubt any longer. They all knew to spot it by its ever-dripping mane, of course. But that laugh, it sounded almost human, and coming from such an animal, it just wasn't natural. "I have come for what was trysted," the Kelpie said simply, but the villagers could hear the underlying threat. If he did not get what he wanted, there would be consequences. Undeterred by the threat, the reckless man spoke up again. "We owe ye naething, ye monst. Aaron, dinna anger it. Dae ye expect me tae reason wid it?" Aaron snapped at his wife, without looking away from the Kelpie. "Oh, for the love of the Almighty." Marta MacClan Brock muttered as she stepped forward, away from her husband. "The lassie ye seek is nae here. She fled with her folk just this morn. Nae one here knows where they might have gone." The Kelpie laughed again, but there was no humor in it. "Ye will regret this." he promised. If I ever smell a lass with Irish blood within your midst, I will nae stop hunting ye until I am given what is rightfully mine. Nae one will be safe from my wrath, be they man, woman, or bairn. This I promise ye. The villagers of Fuchar held their breath as the Kelpie ran from them and disappeared into the night.
Ooh, I just got chills. Every time I read that opening, it's like, whoa, so creepy. Like, ominous, lurking, the undertone for the whole book sets, and you're like, now I gotta keep reading. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I will stop you there. We will return for the commentary after the break. Alright, so building on that lovely commentary that you started us with.
Yes.
Are there any, did you notice anything or are there any questions you would have for me?
What kind of research did you do for this book? Because the language seems like, I don't know about you, and I know with the whole race thing going on, I'm looking at you now, and you're super white. But, okay, we're going to edit that out. Anyway, what I mean to say is, you don't look Scottish at all. And even while we were reading, like, your accent reading it was, like, you could tell you took a lot of time researching and discovering the way they talked over and
I tried to immerse myself as much as I could because I knew I needed to be able to write that accent, even if it was just a tiny bit.
Reading accent is pretty good too. I giggled a little bit. I don't know if you caught it while you were reading. I was like, don't fuck up the recording. Don't fuck up the recording. But I was like, oh my gosh, it's the cutest thing I've ever heard you say, by the way.
But, thank you. But, I knew that even if it was just a tiny one, even if we didn't get the full range of the accent, to make it believable that they're in a country that is not their home,
yes,
then the Scottish people needed to speak in a Scottish accent. And I tried to implement it as much as I possibly could.
I will not lie, reading this book, that was probably the hardest thing about reading it on your own, is picking up that accent. Because a lot of times I was like, what is that word? There are so many Google Translates. So many Google Translates. But that's what makes it great. It's authentic. You can definitely tell the research that was put into discovering the language, the culture, the customs throughout the entire book.
I put a lot of thought into it, but you know what is the most interesting thing that a lot of people don't know?
What would that be?
This book, being about a Kelpie and being set in Scotland, was a complete fluke.
Really?
Yes, because how this began was, I didn't, unlike some of my other stories that I had been thinking about for a long time and they just kept building and building and building, the Kelpie's Curse, or ones that started as a dream, the Kelpie's Curse did not start as that. I had heard about NaNoWriMo, which, National Novels Writers Month, right? 50,000 words in a month. I had heard about that, and I really wanted to do it, but it was going to start really, really soon by the time I had heard about it.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted to participate. Well, then I started thinking about things, and I knew I wanted to do a horror story, because when I was a little girl, I was really good at telling scary stories to my brother and my cousins, to the point that my aunt did not appreciate the nightmares and bedwetting that I did to my cousin.
Yeah.
And, you know, biggest praise I ever got from my cousin Angel, who the book is dedicated to, was she, I think we were all in Grandma's kitchen one day, and she was like, you know, little Rosie is so creative, and she is, and to be frank, she is really good at scaring these kids. You know, she's going to be the next Stephen King. Mm-hmm. But, and you know, I love that she said that, but I can honestly say I do not want to be the next Stephen King. Stephen King is amazing, and he was my idol, but I don't want to be the next Stephen King. I want to be the first Rosemary Roar.
Excellent, yeah.
But, so, I knew I wanted to do horror, but all of the horror ideas I had had in the past, you know, vampires and werewolves, they're just so overdone, and they're going to get drowned in all these angsty romance dramas.
Yeah.
So, I was like, you know, what hasn't been done? What hasn't been so overplayed that I can't stand the song on the radio that I used to love? Yeah. You know, type of thing. And then I was at the library one day, and I was just flipping through this book. It was a random book. Didn't even know what I picked up, except for the fact that it was in one of my favorite sections of the library, which is the mythology and folklore section. Mm-hmm. And I stopped on a page, and it was this story about a Kelpie. Mm-hmm. And from that moment on, I knew I had to write about a Kelpie. And what made it even more amazing to me is that while it has gotten a little more media attention than what it may have in the past, the Kelpie, for the most part, belongs to a single folklore, which means its depiction in the media is very limited, because you have the Kelpie, and you also have another Greek, a Greek one that's similar, but definitely it's not the Kelpie. Mm-hmm. But see, this thing was terrifying. And don't want to give anything away. The reader will find out. But, you know, if you know, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, building on what I was talking about before she stopped me for commentary for a break, even that little prologue scripture, you can feel the horror in the voices of the townsfolk. They are, this Kelpie does not mess around. He's terrifying. And the darkness, the omnicity, the mystery, it makes you want to read more. I had never encountered a Kelpie. I didn't even know what a Kelpie was. And, you know, that little scripture that Rose just explained to me, you know, I didn't know any of that. So that is very interesting. And, you know, she's right. Werewolves, vampires, they've all been done before. I am very impressed with the fact that she chose such an underrated villain, you know, that no one knows about, no one talks about, no one has even heard of, and ran with it. This is a brilliant idea, and to think that it was just a fluke, you know, just an idea that, you know, shits and giggles, you know, and it turned into this masterpiece work of art that I'm geeked about. I'm so excited about, and I'm so proud of my best friend to see her come up with this. I've always loved all of her stories, but but this one is special. You know, like I said, the amount of time that goes into the research, the character building, the, you know, everything, and to think she did all of that on top of writing for this contest, where she had to write so many words a day under that pressure while she was, you know, trying to be a housewife, trying to have her own life, you know, it's impressive, it's inspiring, and it's beautiful, and I can't wait to dive even further into this, because again, it's so unique, and it just blows my mind.
And you know, also building on that, you know, the thing that you love most about this book is a fluke as well.
Really?
Yeah, like, originally, and like, quite a few key things were just because of the time constraint. Like, I was like, okay, I gotta write 50,000 words. I know I'm gonna write a Kelpie. Can't really, but then I was like, wait, I need characters. I'm running out of time, so and like the way I create characters takes a lot of time, because I will start out with a basic character, and then I'll add a little bit here, and I'll add a little bit there, and it's like the longer I'm able to think about this character and put this character through scenarios in my head, the more complex they get, the more it builds on.
Of course.
But I didn't have time for all of that. So I was like, you know what? Me and my two best friends, those are the characters.
Boom. Done and done. And you know what? It turned out to be the greatest thing ever, because like you said earlier, you didn't have to think. It was second nature. You already knew your characters. You already knew what they were going to say.
I already knew them. I already loved them. You know. We have made fun of each other for years, going, you know what? I probably know how you're going to react better than you know how you're going to react.
You know, and reading this book is anecdotal proof of those. It's pretty interesting. You know, and that just brings... Yeah, you know, these characters in the book, based on these people, I mean, spot on. I can't get over that. I mean, just even, you know, when I didn't agree with a character or a scenario the character was portrayed in, I had to stop back and say, you know what, that is how that character was supposed to be, though. There's nothing I would change about it, even though... It's like, really? But,
you know, it's one of those things, especially when you know that the character's you.
Yeah.
Where you're like, really? Okay, yeah, she's got me.
Yeah, shame. Sorry, not sorry. But, yeah, it's really great. I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
Kind of a bit.
Anyway, reverting back to the prologue... what kind of tone were you trying to set for your book with that?
What I was trying to do is, like, because you don't open up with, like, in chapter one, as we will get to, you're not opening up with the horror. You know, you're not opening up with the genre that this book actually is.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted that ominousness to be in the back of the reader's mind.
Yeah.
So that where...
And that's exactly what it does, too. That's what I was trying to describe. It's like it sets the tone. It puts a little spike in your pulse that intrigues you to read more. Like, why is this town so scared of this character? Why is, you know, this isn't English. Why is it set in Scotland? You know, it intrigues the reader to learn more about the book. And the only way to learn more about the book is, well, to read the book.
You know? Yes. And the book being set in Scotland, again, another fluke. because, you know, I had the characters. I had what the monster was going to be. But then I started to think to myself, why would a Kelpie be in Michigan?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't see too many of those in here, yeah?
So, you know, and even though that we grew up around a river, it doesn't make any sense for a Kelpie to be in Michigan.
Yeah.
So, it only made sense to have them go to Scotland.
Of course. And we'll get more into that. But, yeah, definitely. I can see where you came from there. I mean, Sherwood, Michigan. Not many people know it. You blink and it's gone. I mean, you know, there's like a stoplight in the middle of the town and that's all we have. Like.
Alright, well, I think that's all the time we're going to have for right now. But in the next podcast, I will be, Estelle will return. And with her will be Crystal Loughman, and the three of us will be reading from day one.
Oh, I'm so excited. This is where it gets good, guys. It gets good. Yes, I'm really excited to dive into this project. And thank you again, Rose, for having me tonight and letting me be a part of this with you and sharing your success, because I cannot express to you again, and I don't just mean this because I'm drunk, but how very proud I am to be a part of this and to know that you're a published author, dude. That's pretty awesome, and I'm so proud of you, and I couldn't have been happier. You know, the spite in me is like, man, she beat me to writing a book, but I'm so happy for you, and this turned out to be your greatest work ever, in my opinion, and I'm so amazed.
And I do have one final question for you in closing.
Yes.
And this is a question where I will neither confirm or deny, essentially, if you don't know the answer. I have named this podcast Claws and Talons. Do you know what that's in reference to?
I feel like I should, but I don't.
Well, we'll just have to wait for Crystal then.
Yeah, she would know.
Until next time.